Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Maxwell, and you have checked in with Proud to Be Different, my new time slot, which is 3 p.m., on the Essence of Success Network. The call-in number will kind of not be used today so much. It will be next week, and I've got great interviews set up for the rest of the month of November. Today, I just want to kind of focus on my own story. So if you're able to just chill out and sit back and listen and hopefully snuggle up with some good tea or coffee or cocoa and listen to my story and hopefully get something out of it, that'd be awesome. Anyway, so I'm just going to jump into it. And we've got Nina, wonderful Nina, is going to be in the chat room right now. So if any questions do come up on the chat, that's awesome. Or if you just want to say a shout out, hey, I'm here, that's cool too. Anyway, so we are having wonderful weather in Seattle this afternoon, which I'm excited about because it's been kind of, well, crappy for the most part. So basically what I wanted to do for the 1st of November's show was wanted to kind of give a lot of folks my background, because a lot of folks know that I come from Central Washington and that I'm a child of the 70s and 80s and I obsess about music and all this kind of stuff, but they don't really know a lot of my deep history. And although my therapist has always been very, you don't need to be sharing all kinds of information about your life because people will use it against you kind of thing, which I completely agree, I also believe that if someone can get something out of what has happened to me in my life and they can connect with it and say, I'm not alone, that's a good thing. That's important, because that way we can connect with each other and say, we are a family. We have experienced these problems together. We have experienced these positive things together, and it makes us better humans, so I think. So I was born in the early 70s, and I was a second or third attempt at a child. It was an unfortunate situation for me because I didn't find out until I was about 17 or 18 the truth behind my being brought about. I was raised by a single parent mother. I never remember having any childhood experience around my father. Though there were photos, he was never in the picture. And I never really understood that, and I had a lot of resentment against it, obviously. So when I was a teenager and was having this deep, heartfelt discussion with her about things, she admitted that she had been going through a lot of trauma and, depression and that sort of thing. And so she felt that the only way that she could have true love unconditionally is through having a child. So she felt that having a baby was going to mend her wounds. And I told her honestly at that point that if I knew anybody who had come to me and said, I want to have a child because I'm broken and I think it's the only way to fix me, I would advise them not to. To which her response was, so you don't think you should have been born? To which I tried to argue, no, that wasn't the point, but yeah, what are you going to do? So walking around with this weight on my shoulders for my life since then has been very difficult, because it's coming to the concept that I wasn't really wanted as a child that most people want to have a child for. I was a band-aid, basically, an emotional band-aid to be taking care of somebody who was broken and really couldn't fend for themselves and fend for a child for the most part. This is why, as I was growing up, I had the local mental health office keeping an eye on me, and her friends that were a little bit more cognizant than she was, keeping an eye on me, making sure that I was okay. I had a lot of issues growing up. I had the fact that both my parents had alcoholism issues, the mental illness things on her side, and then also I had learning disabilities as well. And a lot of it was around attention deficit disorder, not being able to focus, having a really hard time understanding things. Later on as an adult, I got tested and found out that I have a mathematical disability like dyslexia, where everything number-wise sort of just looks like numbers. I know their numbers and I know the symbols. I just don't know what it all means. And I can do like really easy multiplication or add and subtract and that sort of thing, but nothing above that. So going through all those sort of things just sort of made growing up a pain. And then also starting drinking when I was 5, sipping alcohol that was left in the refrigerator when I was a child. And then also coming to terms with being gay. Now, the one thing that I do give my parent is she was supportive of me when I was outed at 15, and she said, "It's cool, don't worry about it. I'm here to support you." So dealing with the ideas, and this is like the 70s and 80s, so dealing with the ideas that I like guys the way that I should be liking girls, just was Central Washington, small farming community, very conservative, more places of worship than police officers. Yeah, it's a pretty well-painted picture at that point. And the thing that I'm surprised that I was able to make it through is the fact that I did have positive support, both in adults, and I did have several people that were my own age that supported me, both male and female. And I've talked with them since, a lot of the folks that I grew up with that were my peers, and they never judged that. That was never a part of the process for them. To them, it was just me, myself, and I was who they cared about. And because of the fact that there was, on the opposite side of that coin, the abuse from the peers that didn't like me, that judged me because I was poor, because I was fat, because I was not athletic, because I was artistic, because I was gay, even perceived to be gay. The violence and the terrorism that I would receive on a daily basis put me in such a level of fear for the most part. So when I did actually get positive reinforcement, I didn't know how to deal with it. When someone would say something nice to me, I wouldn't accept it because I didn't know how to. It's literally taken me up until being an adult, into my 30s and now 40s, of accepting positive reinforcement. When somebody says, "I think you're doing a good job. I like how you look today. I think you're a good person." I have to stop and think in my mind, okay, I got a compliment, and now I have to say thank you.
And I think all of us that are broken in one form or another, we have to take those steps and we have to say, okay, I have to accept positive, because we learn very early that we're not supposed to. We get told that. So we're like, no, we can't do that. So going through life in Central Washington was very brown. And I say in the color sense of being brown, it was a desert. It was the 70s, so it was a lot of mahogany, fake mahogany wood paneling in people's houses. Browns and oranges were the 70s, and then it turned into neon in the 80s. It was very interesting. I grew up in a time period where politically things got really screwed up. Conservatism became the norm into the Reagan administration, or if you're connected to Canada or the rest of the UK, you'd have the Thatcher administration. And so the only images that I saw of gay folk on TV were people who were dying from AIDS and a government that was not supporting its own people that were dying. And so it was just, I only saw my future as a death, very quick, very short death before I even became 21. That was kind of my image. So I had to parallel that at the same time with the advent of MTV. MTV came along, and I saw this as an out of this is what the outside world could be like, what the clothing, what the music. I realized that there was a world outside of even America, the United States, of music through MTV. So there was a great bastion that I think that it did help me in. And then, I don't know, it was kind of interesting because when I was outed, like I said, in junior high school, it was a very scary time frame. There was a lot of people who, I mean, I literally felt like by the end of the day, everybody in my town in Central Washington knew who I was and knew that I was gay. Whether they did or not, who knows? But from my standpoint, I saw it as truth. And so they all just sort of judged me and plotted my demise. The abuse that I suffered, I would get beat up on a daily basis if I was in public. I got it at school. Adults would see what was happening and turn their backs on it. I was jumped by some folks, and the police didn't do anything about it. And this is all before high school. So by the time that I got to high school, I made it 2 months, September into October. And then early part of October, I threatened to kill myself. And I said, I can't handle this anymore. The abuse is too much. If you guys won't do anything, then I'm going to off myself and that's it. So the student advisor or the student therapist that was there contacted my parents, and we decided that I was old enough to finally get transferred to the alternative high school in a neighboring town, which was something that we had wanted to do, but was only available for high school. Now they actually have it for junior high school too, which is freaking awesome. So yay. But for me, I went there. It was either Halloween or it was the day after Halloween. I think it was a Monday after Halloween. And I did not speak to anybody for the rest of the year, even though everybody was all nice and kind and
supported me, everything, I still was so shell-shocked from what had happened to me for so many years that it took me months before I'd open up. And the following year, the second year that I was at the high school in Moses Lake, or the alternative high school in Moses Lake, I only had one student that I had to deal with who didn't like me, and he was told very directly by his friends that if he was to even think about touching a hair on my head, they would put the hurt on him big time, which was pretty amazing to me. I thought that that was something I would never experience in my entire life. And these were like burnout kids and butt rockers and pregnant teenage girls and basically the kids that got thrown to the wayside. They were coming to my support, and they felt that I was a part of them. And that had not been shown to me at all before, and I realized that these people were brilliant. Well, I shouldn't say it hadn't been shown to me before, because there were the people that supported me, but I still felt that I was on the sidelines watching the world go by. The thing that's been the most interesting about thinking about my childhood and thinking about my past for the show has been how much honesty I wanted to give. And I think that it is important to talk about certain details that people are dealing with that are afraid to talk about. Two events that happened to me, one was at the age of around 10 or 11. The other one was when I was 18. Both involved two different people, both older than me, both male, and they were rape situations. I do not call them molestation, child molestation, because I just think that's kind of a fakey word to get away from what it really is, which is violence and rape. The first case I had blocked out up until about a couple of years ago that I started having memories on. The second one, I still to this day have very clear recollections of what happened. And I think because of what happened to me the first time around, it sort of broke my mental that if it happened again, I would just automatically, I wouldn't fight for myself. I had no control over it, and I just sort of fell. I have slowly but surely been dealing with this in therapy and talking with folks about it. Surprisingly enough, a lot of my own friends that are my age or a little bit younger that are male have talked about, honestly, their dealings with being raped as children as well or as young adults. And I think that that candor is something that is telling of our future, that our new outlook on things that we are able to express honestly, the abuse that we suffered. The generations before us didn't have that ability. They were too afraid to. They were told not to, so they didn't. It brought shame on the family. Whatever reason, they weren't able to express what they went through. At this point, I'm kind of like, if I don't talk about it, and put it away in a box someplace, it'll come back to haunt me. It will cause nightmares. It will cause problems in how I deal with people. It had for the longest time to begin with, I think, because of my I suffer from social phobias and that sort of thing. And so I think talking with my therapist and talking with friends and dealing with it publicly is giving me that out of being able to say, okay, this is what's happened to me. This is what's broken down my brain. And this is what I have to do to rebuild that point in my head. So all these things were all happening at once.
I was obsessed with movies. I was obsessed with music. Excuse me. I was obsessed with televisions, or television programs, and we had cable, and it was awesome. And then at the same time as I got into high school is when I started my heavy partying period, drinking a lot more publicly, a lot more often. And it got to the point where I had to make a decision in my life, and I got sober a couple months before I turned 21. The reason why I made that decision was because I was hurting people around me, besides just myself, and I realized that I couldn't do that anymore. And so I started the process out there in my hometown, and then came here, and with luck, knock on my forehead wood, I have still stayed sober. And it's been over 20 years, which is still kind of amazing to me. But with my air quote spirituality and belief systems, I always tell people very simply, well, I was baptized Roman Catholic, raised in Episcopal Church, became an atheist. So there you go. And a lot of it is that I just kind of felt that science was the way to go for me. It made more sense. Logic and how we interact with each other is more of a logic thing than having a belief system in something that wasn't tangible. If there's something tangible, I have more of an understanding of it. But I have not had much of a solid relationship with my parent. It's been off and on over the decades. And at this point in time, I made the decision just to no longer deal with it because I was not getting a lot of support. I was getting a lot of negativity. And after I cut off ties, I realized that it was causing me not to have creativity happen in my life. Because I had come out of all of my trauma and all the stuff that I've dealt with as a kid growing up, as being both an artist and a writer. And for a while, I wasn't able to draw. It was just something that just didn't happen. I had no energy for it. The flow didn't happen. The wall went up, and I couldn't, whatever you want to call it, it just, boom, didn't happen. And then afterwards, when I cut ties with my parent, then I felt more comfortable again. I felt more myself, and I felt more okay. My writing has always been there. It's one of the very few things that was done properly for me was being raised in libraries. I read voraciously. And still to this day, I read like two or three books at a time. And that's not counting like reading articles online or newspapers or magazines or whatever. So I kind of find it interesting when I meet somebody and they say they don't like to read. And I'm like, you have to read every single day of your life. You have to read stop signs. You have to read the back of bottles to see the ingredients for food. I mean, there's nothing you can get away with. It's not reading. It's part of how being a human is. Language is part of who we are. So I'm like, ha-ha, gotcha. But my writing style is very much about coping with a lot of my own demons, dealing with my childhood traumas, dealing with those that did me wrong growing up. but doing it in a way where it's safe and sane, and I get to do things that I didn't get to do back then now. I get to blow buildings up. It's awesome. So as a upside to my sobriety and to my adulthood, I've actually connected with my father, and I've been able to have more of a relationship with him that I didn't have before. And he and I have made amends from both our points on what happened, and we're both cool with it. And we're both big nerds, and so I do feel that being a geek is genetic. It is passed on like anything else. And he is a really amazing human being, and I'm really glad to say that I am his kid for the most part. He is someone that I hope to look up, or that I hope to look up to, that I hope to have a lot of the similar sort of things that he has, because he is a very kind, gentle person. So that's kind of the nutshell. The breaking it down a lot is the people that I'm still friends with today that I knew growing up, which I did never think would ever be a part of my life, have all come through Facebook. Facebook has been the connector to these people that I knew growing up that were going through their own shit. They were going through their own stuff, but we lived in such bubbles, individual bubbles, that we weren't really aware of each other. I had a friend of mine who was told not to talk about his nationality. I had another friend of mine who, she had been raped as well, and later went on to basically just throw her life away as an adult entertainer. There are people that have done very successfully in their lives that I grew up with who I just now am getting back together with, and I'm like, wow, these people have come from meager means as I did, and they have astonishingly well lives, and I keep stroking their fire saying, do you stop and look at how great things are? Do you see how much your life has meaning now as to what you may have thought it didn't back then? And I feel sometimes that I am more willing to be my friend's cheerleader than my own. But I get something out of being able to say, hey, this is your life. You're a pretty cool person. You are pretty awesome. So pat on your back. Yay, you. I've been very lucky as an adult. I've seen a lot of stuff, and I've met a lot of incredible people. And I've been able to do things that I never thought I'd be able to do. When I first moved here to Seattle, I thought I was going to be a student at the Art Institute and be a fashion designer and all that kind of stuff and be rich and famous and blah, 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 as we all have these grandiose ideas when we're teenagers. Yeah, that didn't happen. But I'm glad that the path that my life has taken has taken this way, because I've been able to do extraordinary things with people that really make me glad, one, to be alive, two, to have made the choices that I've made. A few years back, I had a emotional breakdown, and I tried to end my life. And obviously, that didn't succeed because I'm still here. But the outcry of people that came to me and said, we want you around. We actually give a flying hoo-ha about you. As opposed to these other people that I was in the same psych unit at Harborview, didn't have that sort of outpouring. And I felt, okay, this is basically telling me something. I may not have been in the best situations in my living quarters, but I knew it was going to change, and I knew I was going to be coming to fruition as to being in a better spot, which is where I'm at now. So I get to be able to watch friends change and become better. I get to see their kids grow up, which I was mentioning. In another radio show last night that it's still kind of weird for me to accept the idea that I'm an adult now and I have friends that have kids, so I'm technically can be considered a parent age person. It's kind of weird because I don't think of myself as that way. But I get to see these lives get molded by folks that went through what I went through, and they get to be really, really cool, really cool adults. So at this point in time, I've come to the opinion of myself that I have faults. I am not perfect. I am never going to have the perfect body. I'm never going to have good hair anymore because that's all gone. I am a diehard romantic at heart, but I don't know whether or not I'll ever be in another relationship again. But that's all okay. I get to be who I am today and just be me. I get to write. If I get a quarter off of it, I'd be happy. It doesn't really need to be a big blockbuster thing with my writing. As long as I'm safe and I'm okay and I'm not in a bad situation again, I'm happy. That's all that matters. And I don't get dirty looks from my goldfish. The thing that I love is that I've been given a chance now doing these shows for the past few months to have more of a voice, to have more of a chance to talk about not only what I've gone through, but also to talk with people that either I know or that I've recently met about what they do and what their lives are like. So I get to find out more about people. And it's completely selfish. Now, if somebody out there listens to it and they get a chance to say, hey, this kind of makes sense, it clicks with me, that's completely awesome. But I want to be able to find out people for myself. I want to be able to interview folks that I've known for a few years, that I've known for a couple of months, whatever, and just say, what is your life about? Do the old Barbara Walters on them. As a kind of a short promo, the next few weeks are already set and lined up, and I'll be posting those here in the next day, 24 hours or so. I was going to do it last night, but I got very tired very quickly and crashed. But I will be talking with my friend Steve next week. And he will be talking with me about his experience of being a father of a young man who is autistic. Because to me, it's autism is something that I think people are just slowly now starting to open up to and are being much more compassionate about, as well as understanding. Steve is one of those people who is incredibly charismatic and funny as all heck, and just he's one of my dearest friends. And I'm curious to see what that type of personality does with raising a pretty cool freaking kid who happens to be autistic. As we've said in the past, both he and his other son are going to be our beloved overlords of our planet. At some point in time, they will be having dual control, and we will accept this and say, kumbaya. After that, the next interview is going to be my friend John. John and I had worked in politics before, as well as doing information tables at rock concerts, so I got to see a lot of really cool shows in the 90s. And he has been, I adore John because he really is a male feminist for all intended purposes. And he is one of the earliest supporters of me when I first met him. I think it was like the second year I lived here in Seattle. And he has worked with incredible organizations, and he and his wife do a lot of work for nonprofit organizations and that sort of thing in the past. So I'll be talking with him about that. After that will be my friend Mike. My friend Mike, who I've known literally since high school-ish age or somewhere around there. And he is currently living down in Texas, and he is a part of the paranormal community. He does research and goes and investigates houses and buildings and stuff like that that are considered to be haunted or have paranormal issues on it. So I'm going to chat with him about his experiences and what he's seen and what he's learned. And at the end of the month, the last show for November, before Thanksgiving, I think, is going to be my friend Matt. And Matt, I've not actually ever talked to or seen face-to-face. He's somebody that I've known through Facebook, and he is somebody who does life coaching, and he's able to sort of read people's personalities and their futures and that sort of thing. And he's got a really good attunement to the human existence, I think. And he's a really sweet guy. A really sweet guy. And he's a cat lover like I am, so can't be all wrong. But it'll be interesting to talk with all these gents. I'm completely aware of the fact that every single interview for the month of November is going to be a male interview. In December, I hope to change that. So I want to try and get some females in there and try and rattle the cages. But I kind of see the ability that I have now to, because I've always been a talker, and growing up, I was always one to be on the phone chatting with people. And so now I have that ability to be able to be on the show for an hour a week or whatever and say, hey, this has been your experience, but go more in depth with it. Or, hey, this is what you do. What do you get to see? What do you think people aren't aware of, kind of thing? I want to, like an onion, I want to peel people apart. Yeah, so the experiences that I've had in the past here as an adult in Seattle, I'm glad that I moved here. It was not for the reasons that I intended to. And this is probably, the city has changed so much in the 20-odd years that I've lived here. But it is one of the most amazing art communities there is. We have film and book and drawing and painting and museums and everything else in between. We have the, just an example, the ECCC, the Emerald City Comic Con that we have in the spring. Our artist gallery is one of the largest in the country when it comes to comic book conventions. We have artists come from all over the country and the world sometimes just to show their stuff off here. And this upcoming year, or this upcoming show next year, is going to be the biggest. And I did find out that I am going to be able to go. I didn't think I was going to, so I will be there at least on Saturday, running around like a crazy person going, "Oh my God, take my picture." And we have a huge film community. Our international movie SIFF program, Seattle International Film Festival, is one of the best there is. In all of this, oh, and the fact that we actually have more used bookstores than any other place on the planet is pretty freaking awesome. But to be in all of the midst of this, I think, is if you're any form of a creative person or if you've been around creative people, it helps you get through the day-to-day sort of stuff. And being a survivor of abuse issues, the creative side of it makes it workable, if that makes sense. I'm able to do things that I didn't think I'd be able to do through the creativity portion of it to help deal with my mental and physical and sexual abuse and all that stuff. So what has gone on or what has happened to me in the early part of my life now that I never thought would happen is being fixed, is being, well, not fixed, but being worked on. And having people stand by me and say, you know what, I had the same thing happen. Or it doesn't matter what happened to you then, this is who you are now. This is why I'm friends with you. So it's tragically true, but it does get better. And I think that the one message that I hope to be able to get out today, at least, is that no matter what you are going through, what you've experienced, or what you even may experience negatively in the future, it's just an experience. That's it. It does not define you as a person. I am not defined by being somebody who was raped as a child. I was not defined as being someone who's in recovery. I'm not defined as being even gay. I'm defined as being who I am, me. And it is all those puzzle pieces together is what makes up who I am. And that's taken me a very, very long time to figure out. And there are times where I wake up in the morning or in the afternoon and I'm just, I'm not feeling it and I won't agree with it. But after a couple of cups of coffee and some tea and maybe a donut, I can get there. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at today. And I'm kind of cool with that. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, which is pretty freaking awesome. I have my friend Chris to thank for that. He got me one of the electronic vapes. And, oh, it's so much healthier and nicer than having to smoke cigarettes. The idea, I couldn't even imagine what it'd be like to smoke a cigarette now, and it's only been since August. So, yeah. And just be able to stand on my own two feet and say, I have no interest whatsoever in drinking, or I have no interest whatsoever in doing drugs, because I know what that would turn me into, is pretty amazing. And standing up and saying, yeah, guess what? I was abused, and I'm still here. It hasn't gotten to me. I'm still going to be standing on my own two feet and saying, hey, I'm still alive. You couldn't get me. There's a part of me, I think, it's kind of funny. There's a part of me that wants to every once in a while, like, troll on the internet and look for my bullies, the people that picked on me, the people that beat me up, the people that called me names or poked me in the back of the neck with a pencil in class. But then I'm like, you know what? They're probably still in that messed up time frame in their head that they were when they were kids. They probably never grew up. Or if they did, it didn't really matter that much to them. So I'm not really going to waste much time on them anymore. I used to think so, but not anymore. I get to move on with my life. So I hope they do too. That makes me sound deep and profound. I do have to give a shout out to, I will refer to them as the ladies. Last night I got to have a really good time chatting with Nina and Lennis and Brenda and a bunch of other fabulous females, all talking about Halloween. And it was the inaugural tea show that they do. Hallow Tea was the title of it. And we got to talk about movies and books and all kinds of crazy things that go bump in the night. And it was really, really nice. And it was really cool. So I just wanted to say thank you to all of them for letting me be a part of that. And I hope to be able to get to talk to them all again soon. Like I said, so this is going to be my new time frame, my new set-aside hour. Every Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Pacific Standard Time. So hopefully I'll be able to, when I have the lines open starting next week, I hope to be able to talk to more folks out there on the East Coast or farther. My friend Steve that we'll be talking with, he's actually up in Canada straight up from me on the West Coast. He and I both have friends across the country, so we'll be able to chat with more folks, hopefully. Anyway, so it's getting to be about, let's see, time left says I have about 15 minutes or so. So I just want to give some shout-outs really quick. I want to give a shout-out to my Oompa, the person that I look up to the most, who is Miss Lennis, who has given me the chance to be able to do this program. I am very grateful to her for all the help, as well as the person who got me introduced to her in the first place, her kid, who she and I went through the extraordinary experience of being bill collectors together. And Miss Nina, who works with me every Saturday in the chat rooms and does a great job. So golf applause for her. Yay! And to the folks that do check in with me, whether it be Heather, and her daughter Chloe, or my friend Billy. A lot of people have supported me in the network, and it's been quite amazing and quite thrilling, and I've been very lucky. So if you don't get a chance, as I always say, to tune into the show when it's airing live, you are able to always either download it or check it after about 5 minutes after the program's finished. And you can hear it in it comparatively or download it completely into an MP3 format. So you can even listen to it on your iPods or whatever MP3 player you have. So if you don't like Apple. But I just want to give the shout outs to also my friend Andrea and her family out in Bainbridge Island. I got to spend a few days with them. And it was amazing. It was a nice little vacation. And I will be taking them to go see the Star Wars program that's going to be on at the EMP Museum here in January. That just got announced this week. So, yay for that. And since I have my membership with EMP Sci-Fi Museum, then I'll be able to get in, and I'll be taking lots of pictures and posting that on my Facebook. So with that, what I want to do is I'm going to go ahead and roll this up. I'm going to start the final theme song, final music that I picked out for today's show. It's one of my favorite tracks and probably most well-known for being used in a lot of movies during the 80s. It's by a band called Yellow, Y-E-L-L-O. Yes.
I just want to interrupt you just for one second. Hi, folks. This is Nina. I am also the manager of the Essence of Success Network. I would just like to thank you very much for your show today and for sharing your life with all of us. Fantastic job, Max.
Thank you, dear.
You're very welcome. And keep up the good work. I love your shows.
Kumbaya.
All right. Now I'll let you keep on with the show.
Thanks, Nina. So yeah, the ending song is going to be like I said, it's been used in a lot of movies, especially in the 80s. It's something that it's when you hear it, you'll recognize it as being very much an 80s song, mid 80s song, and it's completely intermittent. What's the word? I've lost the word. There's no lyrics. Just the title of it. That's it. And as popular as it is, that's very unusual. So, yeah, hopefully you guys all get into it. And next week, again, I'll be interviewing my friend Steve, and we'll be listening to some Falco, which is one of his favorite bands from the 80s. And I hope you guys have a groovy rest of your week. The information for the rest of the shows will be up tonight into tomorrow, except for about an hour or so when I'm watching the new episode of Doctor Who. So you guys have a wonderful week. And thanks again, Nina. And I will talk to you guys later. Love you all. Peace.